McGill Daily of the Daily.
I'm McGill Daily.
Hi, I'm calling from the McGill Daily. Can I ask you some questions?
This is a little bit diplomatic.
News. Can you design?
Could I see you for a second?
We're going to cap this.
News, can you dummy?
Did that story come in yet?
Editorial's in 5 minutes.
McGill Daily.
Unfit to print.
You're listening to Unfit to Print, a McGill Daily and CKUT News collaboration. I'm Alice Dutrue. On today's show, a look at Consent McGill Week and what we all can do to foster a culture of consent on and off of our campus. You'll also hear an interview with Courtney Ayukana, president of the Student Society of McGill, on her thoughts about the SMU General Assembly, which took place 2 weeks ago. But first, headlines. Here are some of the headlines of McGill News over the past 2 weeks. The Fall General Assembly of McGill's Undergraduate Student Society saw a turnout of nearly 800 students, a number unheard of since the 2012 strikes. A controversial motion asking the society to condemn the Israeli state's violence in Gaza and the occupation of Palestinian territories was postponed indefinitely by majority vote before the debate on the motion could even start. This angered many supporters who believe that not allowing students to discuss this issue was a violation of freedom of speech. Postponed indefinitely means that the motion cannot come back in its current state this year. The Assembly also passed motions against harmful military research on campus, against pipeline projects, and against austerity measures. The Assembly lasted almost 8 hours. We'll have more on the SMU General Assembly after headlines. In an unusual surge of activity, the Judicial Board of McGill's Undergraduate Student Society accepted 2 petitions in the past weeks. The first claimed that the Society's chief electoral officer had been hired in violation of the Society's constitution and sought to invalidate the results of the fall referendum. The case was settled in mediation, with the chief electoral officer agreeing to step down. The second petition, submitted last Wednesday, argues that bylaw infractions were committed during the General Assembly and seeks that a special General Assembly be called to discuss the Palestine Solidarity Motion that was postponed indefinitely. The case has not yet been heard. Completion of the construction on McTavish Street has been delayed by 1 month until the end of November. The delay, blamed partially on broken pipes and work stoppages, will see the removal of fencing around the site pushed back until mid-November, after which full pedestrian access across the street will be restored. Paving of the street is expected to start the second week of November and continue until the termination of work at the site. The McTavish stairs will reopen at the end of the month. From October 20th to the 24th, McGill hosted Consent McGill, an event and workshop series meant to educate students, faculty, and staff about consent in sexual situations and daily life. Events range from a sign-making workshop to a movie night to a panel discussion on cultivating a culture of consent at McGill. Consent McGill was one of the first major actions of liaison officer Bianca Tetrault, who was hired as part of the university's response to the discovery of sexual assault charges against 3 Redmond football players in November 2013. More on Consent McGill after headlines. Tens of thousands of people assembled on McGill College last Friday to protest the Liberal government's austerity measures, which include severe cuts to education and healthcare. Despite the fact that the demonstration was deemed illegal by the police, demonstrators marched for over 2.5 hours, making their way down St. Catherine and to Montreal's Old Port neighborhood. At an open forum on McGill's financial situation on October 27th, Provost Anthony Massey announced that an additional $4 to $12 million in cuts to the provincial government's 2014-2015 operating grant is to be expected. The grant was already $15 million lower than projected in the budget approved by the Board of Governors in April, which also included a $7 million deficit. Massey said that in the worst-case scenario, McGill's deficit for the 2014-2015 year will be $34 million, about one-third of McGill's current total accumulated deficit. Starting tomorrow, the Quebec Public Interest Research Group, aka QPIRG McGill, will be holding its annual Culture Shock event series, which aims to explore the myths surrounding immigrants, refugees, Indigenous people, and communities of color. Events include workshops, panels, film screenings, and discussions. QBERG is a nonprofit, student-run organization that conducts research, education, and action on social and environmental issues at McGill and in the Montreal community. For more in-depth coverage of these stories or other news articles, go to our website at mcgilldaily.com or pick up a print copy of our paper on stands now. The SMU General Assembly this year saw contentious motions. The Daily's Anya Sivajothi sat down with SMU President Courtney Ayukawa to hear her thoughts about the motions as well as the logistical aspects of the assembly.
We are here with the Student Society of McGill University, aka SMU, with President Courtney Ayukawa to discuss the SMU Fall 2014 General Assembly that was held last week on October 22nd. Some of the motions that were discussed were the motion calling on SMU to stand in solidarity with the people of the occupied Palestinian territories and the motion regarding support of a campus free from harmful military technology development. Thank you for coming, Courtney.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
All right. So just in general, what is your response to the GA that was held last week?
I guess my overall response to the GA last week is that it definitely had its faults and some issues. But I think because the team that I was working with, we were all so flexible and we were able to react pretty quickly, it overall went pretty well and pretty okay logistically. And I think for me personally, it was really, really amazing to see so many students come out and be engaged and want to have their voices be heard.
All right. What did your team do in preparation for the GA?
That's a great question. So maybe I think the easiest way that I could go through that is I guess a brief timeline of how things panned out. So basically, as per a deadline set by our bylaws and constitution, the GA motions were received at SMU 2 weeks before the GA, and then in the week following, the motions went to steering committee for review, and steering committee basically sent the motions back to the writers with feedback and comments and revisions that would need to be made in order for the motions to end up on the agenda. And then the agenda was finalized and we had the GA about 1 week later. Once we received the motions 2 weeks before and saw how contentious some of the topics were, we immediately contacted McGill to see if he could get LEACLOC 132 or other classrooms. And unfortunately, they weren't very flexible. And so we moved forward with moving the GA from the ballroom to the second floor because we figured we could fit more people in that space and also the ballroom, and immediately looked into getting enough equipment and ensuring that we would have enough staff there and volunteers and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay.
But it was basically all in around 2 weeks. Sorry.
All right. Okay. how much did it cost SMU to run the GA, especially when it ran for so long?
Oh, I actually don't have the finalized things yet because I'm still waiting to be invoiced on a few things. So for example, we bought two additional scanners because that's often a point that is a bit of a bottleneck, the point where people come in and we scan their IDs in order to get a ballot. And so there was that. We had to get a number of extra security agents because of the sheer number of people that we were expecting. I was expecting around 600 and we were prepared for around 800, and I think around 1,000 showed up. So it was really impressive to see the number of students that came out. But because of that, and also the really unfortunate incidents that happened earlier in the day in Ottawa, we wanted to ensure that we had enough security on site. So I would say those two are the major increased costs, but total dollar amount, since I am not sure at this point, I'd rather not say.
Okay.
Although I can probably report it at the next GA.
Okay. All right. One of the most heated debates surrounded the motion calling SMU to stand in solidarity with the people of the occupied Palestinian territories. What does it mean for the motion to be postponed indefinitely, and what are your thoughts on this?
So a motion to postpone indefinitely basically means that the motion in its current form cannot come back. So if a motion calling for other things or very specific things that aren't detailed in that motion Since it wouldn't be in the exact same form, it in theory could come back, which is actually what's happened historically with GA motions like this. I have a lot of thoughts on that entire situation. And in the weeks leading up to the GA and in the week that it's been following the GA, I've had like a landslide of emails and phone calls and people coming by the office and meetings about the motion itself and the motion to postpone indefinitely. And it's interesting because, like, I'm getting a lot of concerns and complaints from people on all sides of the situation. So, for example, I have some students coming to me being like, it's absurd that debate was not held and voices were silenced. And then I'm also getting some students coming to me and saying, it's absurd that that motion even ended up on the agenda and SMU's even willing to open debate on it. And I think, in my opinion, it's not SMU's place to dictate, like, what is and what is not debated.
Mm-hmm.
And the students at the GA voted, a majority of them voted in favor of postponing indefinitely. And at the GA, like, it's not in my power. And I'm really glad that it's not in my power to determine that. And I'm glad that the students have the power to determine that. And if that's the way that it panned out, that's what it is. I guess, I think for me, like, my personal opinions on how everything panned out shouldn't be and aren't that important or relevant, because at the end of the day, it's the students that should decide.
Now that the motion of having a campus free from harmful military research was passed, what are the future steps that SMU is going to take with that?
That's a really good question. And I actually, I don't think I'm the best person to answer that, because the majority of the work and the action that's going to be done as a result of SMU receiving that mandate is going to be in Amina, the VP Externals portfolio. So for now, I think I will not comment.
For the motion regarding harmful military research at McGill, there was an amendment proposed to publicly condemn states that apply military research and condemn recent violence in Gaza. That amendment was not accepted in the end. But do you think this was related to the previous Palestinian solidarity motion that was postponed indefinitely?
Probably a lot. I would imagine that if the solidarity with Palestinians in occupied territories, if that motion had passed, I don't think those amendments would have come up personally. But people can obviously disagree.
In the end, do you have any things that you would improve on the GA now that it's over?
Yeah. Wow. So many things.
Okay.
So there's a lot of things that I am looking to change in the GA. So for example, right now we're actually undertaking a study to see if the way that we scan people in and out of the GA could be revamped, because that's easily what takes the most time and why we have quite long lineups, and obviously, that's not efficient and should be fixed. So there's that. I also am thinking about looking into changing the date of which motions need to come to Speaker or to SMU before the GA. So potentially moving it back up, or moving it to 3 weeks or a month if it's an external motion or something like that. But obviously that itself comes with a lot of drawbacks, might limit how quickly SMU can react to things, because a lot of motions would have to come from the floor in that case. I also, at this point, so for the winter GA, we have actually started talking with McGill already about booking Leacock 132 and basically all of those lecture halls in Leacock in the event that another contentious motion or two or five end up on the agenda. And for now, that's all that's coming to my head, although I know that there's definitely a lot of other things in the works.
All right. Do you have any final comments about the GA?
I guess for now, other than wanting to acknowledge that I think it was really impressive, the number of people, the sheer volume of people that turned out, and a lot of them for many, many hours during midterm season and in a time, and like when SMU couldn't afford to like give food to people, people often like go out, get food, and then come back in. I was really impressed by how patient everyone was and like obviously passionate people were about the motions that were being debated, but just generally like becoming engaged. I would say maybe too long in my opinion. And but again, that's just my own opinion, and it's definitely something that I think we're going to have to reevaluate in the future, because again, it's a matter of balancing, like ensuring that everyone's voices are heard and no one feels like their voices or votes were stifled, with the reality of it being midterm season, and also the longer that a GA becomes, the higher the costs are financially and like mentally. It's very exhausting, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it was really cool.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
That was an interview with SMU President Courtney Aukawa. We turn now to a discussion about Consent McGill Week with SMU Equity Commissioner Sula Green. Last week, McGill held the Consent McGill campaign, which sought to increase campus awareness and understanding about consent through various events throughout the week. I'm joined now by Student Society of McGill, aka SMU, Equity Commissioner Sula Green. SMU Equity held a panel discussion on consent last Thursday as part of the campaign. Hi, Sula.
Hi, Allie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So if you could just start, for those who don't know, by explaining what the Yes Means Yes model of consent is and why it's important to raise awareness.
Well, the Yes Means Yes model is the model that most student groups and activists on campus have been using. And it's really to reaffirm the fact that silence doesn't mean yes, and that explicit and clear consent is mandatory in all relationships. So one of the some of the student groups that put forward the sexual assault policy proposed last year defined consent as clear and explicit permission between those engaging in intimate activity to ensure all parties are comfortable with each action performed, and also that it's ongoing and that it's the responsibility of all parties involved to give their consent and to listen to each other. And also that consent cannot be given if there's any kind of coercion present, including force, physical, emotional, verbal, or any manipulation, blackmail, pressure. So it's a really nuanced and expansive definition of consent that we're trying to put forward to everyone in the community. Yeah.
Can you give us a brief description of the campaign and of the events that were held last week, including the panel that SMU Equity held on Thursday?
Yeah, well, throughout the week, Bianca Tetral, who is the sexual assault response coordinator at McGill, along with a number of student groups, planned Consent McGill, which had tons of different events, a lot of them bottom lined by different groups like the Union for Gender Empowerment or SACOMS. SMU Equity, in particular, put on a panel and discussion on consent culture. And we talked a lot about how we can build a culture of consent in all aspects of our relationships with our peers, with our professors, with our friends and family, and to really talk a lot about how consent culture goes beyond just individual relationships, but actually fosters a community which values consent, not just sexual consent, and which holds people accountable when consent isn't given. And so we had Professor Carrie Rentschler, we had Roma Nadim, who's a floor fellow at RBC. We had Jean Murray, who works at SACOMS. And we had, Alice Gauntley from Healthy McGill. So we had a bunch of different students and then a professor, and it was a very lively discussion with lots of participation.
And can you give us some examples of some of the strategies that were discussed at the panel?
Well, we talked a lot. We talked about some specific tools like giving trigger warnings in class and thinking about how what we say and what we do with people requires consent. Specifically, I remember one of our panelists brought up the idea that like before before unloading a huge emotional burden or drama that you're going through, maybe talking to that person and seeing where they're at, if they're ready to support you, if they're in a good place to support you, and kind of like nuancing our understanding of what relationships require consent. Because often with close friends or a long-term relationship, we kind of put consent to the back burner because we already think it's implicit within the relationship. But we talked a lot about how productive it can be to bring consent into all your conversations. In terms of specific strategies, we talked a lot about how the school should be accountable because they are responsible for the space that we're occupying, how floor fellows should be accountable, basically how we should all be accountable as we navigate our communities and our groups of friends and stuff like that.
In cases of sexual assault, there's often a muddled line between what is consensual sex and what is not. This has been brought into public discourse this week with the allegations brought against Gian Gomeshi. How can we make this line clear and also hold perpetrators of sexual assault accountable?
So I think what Consent McGill has been trying to do this week is show that there really isn't that much of a gray area in terms of sexual assault and how people feel. Like that, where the gray area comes from is from people not talking about how to talk about consent. Like when we phrase consent as just silence equals yes, or as long as someone nods their head, that's consent. That draws a very clear line. But when we nuance the definition a lot and talk about physical, verbal indicators, we talk about implicit and explicit, about the situation, the context, the power relationships, then we get a much clearer picture of how consent is present and the ways in which we're able to give or not to give consent to fully. And I think in the case of Gian Gomeshi, what hasn't been talked about as much is the power relationship at play. I mean, he's a very powerful figure, and there's so much happening with like his employees and stuff, and that's really important to talk about as well. And I think the BDSM thing has really complicated the issue a lot.
Late this September, a Miguel Redmond football player was arrested for domestic violence related charges. And last year, three Redmond players were charged with sexual assault. Miguel athletes are not forced to attend consent workshops. Why do you think Miguel is reluctant to target the athletics department?
I think Miguel is particularly reluctant to target the athletics department because they do represent our community, and they are a very visual representation of what Miguel means, like sportsmanship and all these qualities that Miguel holds very dear. But at the same time, I think Miguel's reluctant to address sexual assault on campus and has been for a very long time. And I still think, despite some progress that we've seen this year, I think it's going to be ongoing. And it's been the activism of a lot of student groups that has really brought forward the change. And last year was a huge year, and it's so wonderful that Bianca has been hired and that we had Consent Week. But I think the majority of the work is being done by students right now, and hopefully we'll see that change. I think in terms of McGill, there's also been a very, I mean, you've seen this play out, like with the difference between the accusations of sexual assault versus the ones about domestic abuse. I think there's a tendency to validate physical assault far more than sexual assault, and they're both part of the same systems of oppression. They are both outcomes of patriarchy and rape culture, and you know, if we stop like distinguishing them and thinking of sexual assault as something so individual, we might be able to address the violence in our community a lot better.
Do you think that these workshops should be mandatory for athletes?
I think they should be mandatory for everyone in our community. I think that it would be wonderful if consent was a huge part of Frosh, a huge part of welcoming people into McGill, like in residence, in academic spaces. I think that everyone at McGill could benefit from consent workshops, including professors, including staff, including students. And I mean, it's not something that you just learn. It's something that's always ongoing. It's like We talked a lot about this at the panel, that despite the fact that some people do a lot of activism around consent and work against sexual assault, I mean, you've never learned enough when it comes to consent, and it's always something that should be in dialogue.
And what are some of the other events that SMU Equity is planning in the near future?
So for next week, we have the first of our Campus Conversation series, and this one's on race and educational injustice, and it'll be held in the Madeline Parent Room in SMU at 3:30 on Tuesday, November 4th.
Great. Thank you so much for being here, Sula.
Thanks, Sally.
Well, that does it for this edition of Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. Tune in 2 Tuesdays from now for our next episode, and make sure to check out mcgilldaily.com/podcast to hear our culture and fiction pieces. Unfit to Print.